Hi, this is Scott.
Pat.
You know, another big financial company is charged with unethical behavior we're going to talk about during the program.
We also have Art Koff. He's going to talk about the 10 international destinations people retire to and why you may consider them as well.
And we've got one of our financial advisors, Justin Wilson's joining us. He's going to share a real client story. Stick around for Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Now, for the Financial Times ranked top investment advisor, Hanson McLean. It's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you're here with us on this fantastic day. At least we hope it's a
it's a good day.
For most of us, it's a fantastic day. You think day. Most days are what you make it?
Good day.
And anyway, we're glad you are spending your time with us today. We consider it an honor and a privilege, frankly. And as you know, we talk about financial matters and how they impact our lives, help you make wise choices with your money, and
take your calls, questions, comments, concerns.
That's right. And overall, have a great time. That's what our objective is, really, frankly, on the program.
Yes.
It's free enough and for you to learn something and grow and everything else.
And we cover some topics, that up-to-date topics, as well as have guests on the show.
Yeah, and take calls as well.
Yeah, at 888-2-HANSON. If you'd like to join the show, it's 888-242-6766.
And by the way,
888-2-HANSON.
By the way, for some of you that are listening, some of you missed our workshop this morning, but some of you still have an opportunity because at 10 a.m. on Saturday, October 15th, for a 75-minute workshop, we've got a special workshop for 7 personal decision points for retirement transition. So a couple hours still for some of you. If you're interested, go to moneymatters.com to register and to get more information. But if you're like, whoa, it's way too last minute, or wait a minute, it's in my market, because different time zones, my market, it's already happened, then we've got another one the week of this upcoming week, the 18th through the 20th, depending on the city. We've got a workshop near you. So in the Denver area, it's in Cherry Creek. In the Bay Area of Northern California, it's in Pleasanton. And in the Sacramento region, it's in Rancho Cordova. So again, moneymatters.com, and you'll get all the information, and you can register. I know registration's filling up, but we'd love to have you still. So anyway, thanks for being part of Hanson McLean. And to kick things off, a number of states have gotten into the pension business.
Yes.
And I think it was like 17 different states, or 27. There's a bunch of them.
And I could make an argument whether this is a good thing or a bad thing from both sides.
The state of California recently signed into law at the end of the last quarter a new plan where the state of California has a state-run retirement program. You know what's interesting about these state-run programs? One thing, they are exempted from the same fiduciary requirements that employers have to do for their 401k. So lawmakers exempted themselves
from the rules that they apply to others.
Private industry. Thank you. Thank you.
So here's the good thing about this, is that it's not... So you're...
What these are, essentially, these are... If your company doesn't have a 401k... These states are requiring, with the new plans, for an automatic enrollment. So you go to work for Joe's Plumbing, and Joe has 12 employees.
And doesn't have a 401k available.
Joe is going to have to offer the state of California's retirement plan, and you'll automatically be enrolled in the plan unless you choose to opt out.
Unenroll.
Yes. You're automatically enrolled.
You're automatically enrolled in the plan.
I guess kind of like you are with disability insurance.
Yeah.
Automatically stuck in it.
Social Security.
Social Security.
Automatically.
And so now these states are...
So here's the good thing, Scott. The good thing is that more people will have access to saving for retirement. That's the good thing. The good thing is that it's probably in the right direction that we're going to have a national sort of... savings rules or plans so that your retirement savings doesn't have to be necessarily connected to your employer, right? But well, that you would be have the direction. Right way. That would.
That's actually what this is doing.
It's starting. It's the.
Unfortunately,
it's the first step.
States taking it over instead of the federal government. Wouldn't you love to see if the federal government said, "Look, I don't care what company you work for, but you can contribute $16,500 a year to retirement, whether it's an IRA or 401k, doesn't matter to us."
Correct. And by the way,
if you don't like the employer's plan, get your own IRA.
Yeah. And by the way, your employer actually doesn't have to have their own plan. You can put it in an IRA. And we gladly pay someone $16,000 more. We'd gladly pay the match and not administer our own 401k.
Would you not? What do you mean we, as a company?
Yes.
You're Hanson McLean, the company Hanson McLean.
Correct. We have a 401k division. We make a living managing retirement dollars. But the point being is it's always tied to the employer.
Yes.
In a world that actually made sense.
Here's our concern about these plans. And I wrote about it in a couple different areas. The issue I have is the states have not done a great job with the retirement plans that they've been managing thus far.
Most states.
Illinois, disaster.
California,
disaster.
Right? Last time they came out with a program, and if you've been a longtime listener of this show, we've been on the air for over 20 years, almost 20 years.
Almost 20 years.
Almost 20 years. And you know that when they came out with what they called airtime for state of California employees, where they could buy 5 years of service time, when it came out, we said this is going to end up costing the taxpayers in the state of California quite a bit of money. But if you work for the state, do it because it works for you. What happened? After a number of years, they ceased offering the airtime to employees because it was costing the state of California so much money. And the risks were unknown.
Well, look, the retirement plans for the states, I don't know if, Pat, is there any states where they're funded fully? I can't imagine.
Oh no, there's a couple, but they're the minority. Yeah,
North Dakota maybe because they got lucky for the oil thing for a while. So,
even Alaska's having problems with their pension plans, which is hard to believe.
Well, that's because they promised. It's the same sort of thing. When oil prices were high, they had the fund, whatever they called that.
Well, that was the state fund, but their employee pension plan.
Right. Well, I know, but it's who cares? It's money coming into the state coffers.
So the danger with this is that
what.
We don't know what the risk is to the taxpayers.
Here's what happened last time. Here's what's happened thus far, we should say. When the financial markets went through a period of robust earnings, lawmakers who weren't there when they designed the plan, that were elected for just a period of time, that when they showed up, they look at this plan and say, wait a minute, we have more money than we need. Wow, isn't this great? You know what? All you people, let's don't bother kicking in more money. Let's take the money and do whatever we feel like it with because we have so much excess. Then when we have a period of low returns, what happens now? Now it's, we need money. That's why you look at the state of California, its public employee retirement system is grossly underfunded.
And this program, who knows how it's going to work? Secure Choice is what it's called. The cost is unclear, but the legislative analysis, according to a legislative analysis, it could cost $134 million to taxpayers over the first several years.
Yeah, it's going to come on. You know how it's going to end.
I know exactly how it's going to end.
Yeah.
It's going to end poorly.
It's a novel approach to help people have money set aside for retirement.
I like the idea. I just don't want the risk to the taxpayers.
It's
not like this is the only alternative. There is not enough out there. Either you can't find an IRA anywhere. Your insurance agent sells an IRA. There's an IRA at the bank. You could get a free.
They could mandate that employers have an automatic enrollment
in an IRA,
and an individual allows they can and choose to invest however they want.
Did not go to the state. Then we'll see how this one ends.
Well, I mean, Social Security looks like it's set up so solvent for the next 100 years.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think we know
how this is going to end.
Yeah, it's probably not going to end well.
And what really needs to do is from top to bottom, retirement savings needs to be looked at and alternatives need to be given rather than the 457, 401k, 403b, 403b7. The menu goes on and on and on.
And anyway, Yes. So we can continue to rant about yet another employee plan, or we can talk about the new view of retirement. So this is a segment of our program where we talk about some of the things that are way people are looking at retirement a little differently, and we have very interesting guests. And, you know, we've noticed a trend in the media. There's lots of stories about people retiring abroad. You see them often in slideshows on websites, right? The top 10 places and their beautiful pictures, and you flip around. So today we've got a special guest, Art Koff. He's an expert. You'll see him, actually, he's quoted quite often when there's these sort of articles. And he's the founder of a website, you ready for this? RetiredBrains.com. Retired Brains is a job and information resource. And so we're glad that Art's written many books on this subject, including Invent Your Retirement and Lifetime Planning Guide. And he also writes a monthly article for Dow Jones and MarketWatch. And so you might recognize the name. And if you go to our website at moneymatters.com, you'll be able to get a link to his stuff as well as a photo of him. So you think, who is this guy? You'll be able to do that. So anyway, Art, welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Glad to be with you.
Thanks for joining us. So you're like an expert on retiring abroad, right?
Well, yes, I've written some articles on it and been interviewed a number of times, but I don't know if there's any real expert in that area.
Well, you seem to be quoted more than anybody.
Art, my family recently went to Costa Rica for a little trip, and I ran into so many Americans and Canadians that had retired to Costa Rica. I had read about it, but they were everywhere. I mean, I shouldn't say everywhere. They weren't in the big city. The further you went away from the big city.
They weren't in the resort you were, probably.
They were outside the resort, yeah. I was at. But I don't like to hang out at the resort. I like to go visit.
Yeah, all right.
So tell us about it.
What are the main reasons that people are retiring overseas? I mean, why is this happening?
Well, the most important reason is the cost of living. Most overseas locations, you know, they're substantially less as far as the cost of living is concerned than here in the U.S. That means that your retirement savings will last longer, and you'll be able to enjoy a significantly lower overall cost of living for the same lifestyle, or even upgrade to a more lavish lifestyle than you could afford in the States. But the second most important reason is health care. Although the cost and quality of health care varies substantially from country to country, there are many overseas locations that offer health care services of all kinds which are equal to what's provided in the United States at a fraction of the cost.
And if I have insurance from an employer in the United States, does that any of that benefit transfer abroad if I move abroad?
Well, some of the insurances do transfer. It depends on your policy, but Medicare does not.
So Medicare does not. So I'm 68 years old, and I've got a health issue, and I'm in the States. Medicare will pick up some of the cost, and I'm in another country. Do you find that people, if they have a serious medical issue, oftentimes will come back to the States or go somewhere else?
Well, that's one of the important things in selecting where you might decide to retire overseas. Many people wish to retire to a place that is relatively close, like Mexico, where it's easier to get back to the States if they have a health issue, and it's also less expensive to get back to the States if they have a health issue.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. At Hanson McLean, we've got a number of clients that maybe if they don't live full-time in Mexico, they live the majority of time in Mexico.
Yeah, it's not unusual at all. And where do you see most people moving to? And as a percentage of the retiree population, the people that aren't engaged in the workforce, is it big number, small number?
It's a relatively small number. And it also is Americans who are generally a little bit more wealthy. The people who have small amounts of money are really pretty much having to retire in the States. In fact, more and more of them are actually staying in the city and actually in the home in which they've lived most of their life. That's the least expensive place to retire.
So these are not people that don't have much money and deciding to go elsewhere. It's people that have some means. They figure I could have a higher standard of living. Is that right?
Yes, and primarily middle class. The extremely wealthy are in a different situation altogether. So it's middle class who also look at their retirement funds and find they really don't have enough to retire in anywhere near the lifestyle that they had planned during their retirement, you know, in their pre-planning for retirement.
Well, that's a reality for so many, isn't it? Just with the financial markets.
Where are they? So give us an example of, you know, if you were given this, the top five countries, where do they end up? You mentioned Mexico. I mentioned Costa Rica.
Well, actually, I owned property years ago in Costa Rica and very much enjoyed my time there. I'm in my 80s, so I still work like 50 hours a week. I'm far from retired, but I have a little different perspective on retirement than most people do.
No, this is it. Can we go on this tangent for a second then? All right. So when you were in Costa Rica, were you retired?
No, I actually, with the Costa Rican Consul General here in Chicago, owned property. We had two hotels primarily designed for fishing. Some people call them fishing camps, but they really were hotels. And people who were interested in fishing both sides, both the Atlantic and Pacific, could go down and since it's a relatively narrow country, could fish first in the Atlantic and stay in our Atlantic hotel and then go to the Pacific and stay there.
So you were working there?
Well, when they say working, I was an owner. I mean, I did some supervision, but most everything was left, you know, to the Costa Ricans who were actually running the hotels.
So the top, what are some of the top countries then that people are going to? Mexico?
Well, actually, I made a list, and if somebody was to go to our website, the list is evaluated on a score. Where, you know, for example, 100 is the top, and it goes on down. So the top place to retire, according to the list, is Ecuador, primarily because the cost of living in Ecuador is at the number of 100. It's actually the least expensive place to retire well. And
you don't have any you don't have to worry about the currency since it's the U.S. dollar is the currency of Ecuador.
Yes.
Isn't your son in Ecuador right now?
My son is in Quito, Ecuador.
Quito.
So he says
that's become recently a big time destination because of cost of living, and I can also, if you want me to, at some juncture during this program, evaluate the whole long list of reasons.
We'll make that available at our website at moneymatters.com.
Yeah, absolutely.
Money Matters. So the number one place to retire is Ecuador. What's number two?
Panama. And three is Mexico. And four is Malaysia. And five is Colombia. And six is New Zealand. Seven is Nicaragua. Eight is Spain, nine is Thailand, and 10 is Honduras. Those are the top 10.
And that's just based on, like, quality of life, access to medical care.
And cost,
right?
Scored.
Well, and climate, infrastructure, entertainment, safety is very important. Cost of real estate. So you have to put them all together, and then what each one of the places gets a score. And then you add all those scores up, and that's how you come up with Ecuador at the top. I mean, for example, if you were looking for a place primarily for health care, you'd go to France. The health care in France is superb, but the cost of living is very high. And so
you know what surprised me about your list, Art, was Spain. I've been to Spain. I thought it was very expensive in Spain. But maybe they were just ripping me off. I don't know.
Spain is very expensive, but when you add a climate, health care, you know, infrastructure, safety, I mean, obviously, you certainly don't want to go to a place that isn't safe. When you put them all together, Spain ranks relatively high across the board, but on some of those areas, it certainly is not near the top.
You've obviously seen a lot of people who have retired abroad, and the thing that I've often thought about. It's that it's life is really about relationships. And I mean, one of the reasons I've lived in the same community for many years is because I end up with relationships. I have family close by. And I thought if I up and moved to a different country, it would be challenging with the relationships I have. How do people deal with that issue? Is they travel back and forth to the States a lot, or they just develop a new life for themselves? Or
well, as far as relationships, it depends on a number of factors. How many expats from the United States live in the area? And frankly, what are your druthers? Some people don't live well in a place where the language is not English. Some people, you know, expect certain amenities that in some countries you just don't find. So each family has to decide, you know, what's the most important. And as I said, one of the things I'm happy to do is to go over, you know, kind of a list of what should be important when you're making that evaluation.
All right, fire away. I like that idea. Well, how long's the list? Because we only have a few minutes left.
It's not that long.
Okay.
But, you know, and I don't have to give the explanation to most of them, but, I mean, safety is top of the list.
Okay.
Feel safe, you're not going to be comfortable in many overseas locations. As far as retirement, climate is much more important than it is when you're just living somewhere. Healthcare is important, and it's even more important depending on your own healthcare. People mm-hmm. who are ill and who are or who have medical problems, definitely healthcare has got to be moved up. You know, lifestyle and cost of living. You know, do you want to be? Is a beach important? Do you like to go out? What's the story with restaurants? Do you like to shop? Do you want to ski? Do you want to live near the mountains or the beach? What about natural disasters? Some places have hurricanes. Others have volcanoes. You know, with regard to Ecuador, although not in most of the areas people are retiring to from the States, you know, there's earthquakes.
Yeah.
I've just been reading about them.
My wife was in a sixth floor of a hotel in an earthquake in Ecuador two years ago.
And the other thing that's really important is what's the attitude towards Americans? You certainly don't want to go to a place where the attitude towards Americans is difficult. And as we talked a little earlier,
we should ask most Americans that too.
Yeah. The time to travel and ease of travel, getting back to the States if you want to visit, and the politics. What about the stability of the
government? I like this.
Well, you know, Art, it's really some interesting information here. And Art's got a website, retiredbrains.com.
We'll link it at moneymatters.com.
And you go to moneymatters.com and you'll get all of that. So, Art, hey, thanks so much for taking some time.
Thank you. This was actually quite good.
Pleasure.
All right. Best of luck to you there, Art. And you know what I find interesting is Art is 80, whatever it was.
You said he's over 80?
Over 80, and he's not retired.
No.
And he lived in Costa Rica and is living in Chicago.
Yeah, which, by the way, he should have got through the list. Safety, climate.
But, you know, the reality is sometimes as we get older, climate, we need to live in, it's not just for...
Desire.
There's some health issues there.
Yes, absolutely.
Altitude might be an issue, or the cold. I was in an Uber a week or so ago, out of town for a business meeting, and the driver was about retirement age, but he was actually from Chicago, and he was telling me, this was in Scottsdale, and he was telling me that he moved to the desert because he had some hip issues and had, I think, some surgeries, and he said when it got cold, they would ache. His arthritis, and
how is he
in a warmer climate? He says he didn't have the arthritic pain. So, there you go.
Yeah.
What do you know?
It's so I
always find it interesting though, because to me, retiring abroad,
I would have a difficult time with it.
And mostly just because this community of friends and family I have now that I don't think I'd want to leave it all behind, then I'd probably be.
But here's a guy that writes about retirement that's not retired at the age of 80, which is probably the most interesting part of it.
That's what I found the most interesting, nor is he living abroad.
Yeah. Yeah.
But look, you know the nice thing about
it? It's life, everyone's own goal.
That's right.
Right? You write the story.
Absolutely. And one of the things is a financial advisor to Hanson McLean, people come and say, how much money do I need to retire or whatever? Look, everyone's unique, and we all have an opportunity to create the life that we want. Now, unfortunately, some people get to retirement age and don't have enough saved for everything that they want out of life, which is why we talked about the importance of making sure you save. But there's many people that, like Art, in his 80s and can still working, but helping other people try to figure out how to retire. But every situation is unique, and I think that's what makes, I think, one is this country kind of great, the opportunities that we all have, whether you stay in this country or retire abroad somewhere else. So quick reminder of Hanson McLean's workshop, retirement planning workshop, 75-minute workshop. It is this upcoming week, October 18th through 20th, in a Denver area, the San Francisco Bay Area, and Sacramento region. MoneyMatters.com for full information, MoneyMatters.com. We're taking a quick break. Stick around for more of Hanson McLean.
Advice without an agenda. It's back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
That's right. Scott Hanson here.
Pat McLean, thanks for tuning back in.
By the way, this program has been available via podcast for a few years. And I don't know how to get it on Android. All I've ever had is the Apple products because I'm not that clever. And they've somehow figured how to make products for old guys that aren't very clever. But I know on iTunes, if you search Hanson McLean, it'll take you to our podcast. And if you sign up for it, it'll be delivered to you each week. But we've started in the last couple of weeks having our podcast in video format as well. So I see me waving. Here's a wave. Waving to the cameras.
Oh, right, like this.
I don't know which camera. We have three. Yeah. So
you can get a Sudoku model right now.
So, yeah, what Pat really does during the show. So if you're interested in our podcast and, you know, you'd like to watch a podcast while listening to a podcast.
Which, why wouldn't you?
Next, we need some other sensories.
Great. Yes.
At the same time.
Yeah. Like shocks you every time. It shocked you somehow.
Like real
shock. Like your phone like lights up. Because okay, because you can't satisfy enough of the senses. That's what we always said growing up.
We had the auditory, now we have visual as
and
well.
And the next thing you know.
I don't know about that. But so go to iTunes and somehow sign up for it. And rate us. Rate us, by the way.
We can't ask you to rate us good.
No.
It's against the rules in our industry to say anything positive about us unless you want to.
So go rate us. It would help. We would actually appreciate that. So Hanson McLean. Just search Hanson McLean. You'll find us. Sign up for us.
Yeah, it's Hanson McLean.
So, and there was an interesting article that I got a couple weeks ago. And some of you might follow this. And it... Look, we're in an interesting time, right? Interest rates are low. It's challenging for investors and retirement savers because interest rates are so stinking low. The stock market has gone up over the last number of years more than the company's earnings behind those.
Which can lead to bubbles.
A price imbalance, anyway. Whether or not it's a bubble, bubbles... But many people would say that the stock market's in a bubble right
now. That is correct.
So it's not.
But it can lead to, if it continues for a prolonged period of time,
a price dislocation. Prices,
okay, you can call it that.
Sounds better than overpriced.
I don't know if anything such thing is overpriced.
Okay, so Robert Shiller is a name that some of you may be familiar with because Robert Shiller not only is a Nobel Prize winning economist, but he predicted in the year 2000, he said he came out with the book Irrational Exuberance, which is a term that Alan Greenspan had used, and basically said U.S. stocks were way overpriced. It's a speculative frenzy going on. And he also had a book in 2005 where he talked about how the housing market was in a bubble. So he predicted both those things accurately.
He's a pretty bright guy.
And he's come up with, along with a Harvard economist, John Campbell, they came up with what's called the cap ratio, which is essentially...
He's also the Shiller Housing Price Index as well.
Yeah, which looks at what it basically does. It's cyclically adjusted price earnings. So it's a price earnings ratio They say, let's, instead of looking at the current ones, let's really look at what's more of a 10-year average, because we know that there's going to be some quarters or years where it's, you're going to have above average returns, and some quarters or years you're going to have below average because of a variety of different factors. So let's try to smooth those things out and come up with an average. And so this this adjusted price earnings ratio has looks expensive. So the PE using this has given a number right now about 27.
Which means the price that you pay for a stock for every $27 you pay in the broad market, they earn about a dollar.
Which is about the same level it was in 2007, right before the financial crisis. So the 50-year average, if you go back, has been about 20. So we're getting a little kind of
lofty,
deep here. No, I'm just saying as far as some of the numbers were. Right now, according to this, it looks like it's been high. But you know what's interesting? So the Wall Street Journal, what the Wall Street Journal said, they said, is there anything that's being missed here? And what they put into question was, are the way we're measuring earnings different today? Because earnings are based upon a GAAP accounting principles, general accepted accounting principles, GAAP accounting, which has changed a number of times. Right, so
what they're saying is it's not fair to make those comparisons today to something that happened in the past unless we make sure that we're comparing exactly the same thing.
So what the Wall Street Journal did, they used the same methodology that Mr. Shiller did, but now they looked instead of at price-to-earnings ratio, I mean, sort of earnings based upon GAAP measures that companies report, they looked at the Commerce Department's quarterly data on the total U.S. tax corporate profits. They said, what are the taxable profits that corporations are putting out there? And they looked at the after-tax number, then they adjusted it for that. And based upon that adjustment, it didn't look like the stock market was overpriced much at all. As a matter of fact, it was about in line with where it had been historically. Oh, then, of course, Dr. Schiller said, no, but you're missing this and that. So, look, we can sit and argue, and we're not going to spend too much time in the radio program. The fact is,
no one's saying it's underpriced.
I wouldn't say that. When you got a time when the 10-year government bond is 160 or somewhere in there, when you look at other alternatives, there are some that say, yes, it is in fact a good value right now. And frankly, Pat, if interest rates remained at this level for the next 30 years, it very well may be underpriced.
That I'll give you that.
So,
because it's a supply and demand market for capital as well.
And when also we have a period of time when central banks continue to increase the monetary supply.
Yes.
Through a variety of different things. It's anyway, so that was is that market overpriced, underpriced?
So in this argument, they came to the, no one's quite sure.
What we do know is they're more expensive than they used to be.
Than they were 4 or 5.
Relative to their earnings.
Years ago.
And sometimes you hear people say, well, what goes up has to come down. Look, when the Dow Jones Industrial started, the index was at 100.
So, right? Yeah.
When I started in the industry, I forget if the Dow was at 2000 or 3000. I think it was around 2000 in 1990.
It was low.
So, you know, it's...
Speaking of starting, I had a question for you.
For me?
Yeah. Didn't you attend that Pride? Because you've been on the board at Pride. When did you start that? It's the Pride Industries.
I'm on their foundation board.
And Pride Industries, what is it?
It's the largest employer in the nation of people with disabilities.
Like?
Of all kinds of disabilities. From people who have significant mental disabilities to physical disabilities. A lot of disabled vets are employed by Pride Industry, the largest employer of people
with thousands and thousands.
Yes, thousands of people with disabilities.
And what was the function yesterday?
It's 50th anniversary of Pride Industry.
Oh, is that? It's been around 50 years.
Started in a church basement in the foothills of the Sierras with families that had disabled kids thinking, what are we going to do? How can we help these kids? How can we help them have some sort of job? And the term pride comes from the feeling that somebody has when they earn their own wage, when they get a paycheck from their own labor. And it doesn't matter if you, if your IQ is 150 or if your IQ is 75.
You would still have a prize.
Yes. And the impact the organization's made on not only the individuals with the disabilities, but the families as well has been impactful. So last night was our 50th anniversary
Fun?
Celebration. Well, fantastic. 50th anniversary.
Well, congratulations.
And, anyway, it was cool. By the way, we're going to move on to something else. But Pat, you received an award a week or so ago.
From a small Jesuit high school.
What was the award?
Yeah, they call it the Insignius Award for people that are, every year they choose a family they give this to. And they called me a couple months ago and said, you know, we're going to give this to you. And I said to them, I used to have a lot of respect for your organization until you chose me to receive your awards. It was nice. It was a nice honor. And I'm a big fan of the Jesuit education.
As your yes, three boys through the Jesuit.
Yes, three boys.
And my son's actually at a Jesuit. Is your son at?
I have a daughter at a Jesuit college, but not a son. So it's,
You know, it's funny. So I visited, and we're going to, this is Hans McClain. We're going to go back to the program. My son's at Boston College, and we had Parents Weekend a couple weekends ago, and I was visiting him. And I asked him, what is most surprising about being here in college? What is your most, I was expecting something about education. He said, the lack of lack of diversity.
Really?
Yes, lack of diversity. And how Irish everybody is here.
It's Boston.
I said, it's Boston. About a quarter of the students come from local there. Anyway.
Yeah, it's Boston. What do you expect? By the way, if you'd like to join this show, 888-2-HANSEN. That's 888-242-6766.
If you'd like to call and have a question answered on the program.
That is correct.
Yes, 1-888-2-HANSEN. You can also go, if you go at moneymatters.com, you can send us an email with a question saying, hey, I'd like to have you, I almost said the boys, because we were called boys when we started 20 years ago. But if you go to moneymatters.com, you can get some questions. And there was, we had received one, and unfortunately, we don't answer all the questions because but we try to pick ones that we think are relative to much. So one of these questions was asked if we can talk about investments like the Lending Club. This gentleman has a small portion of his Roth IRA involved in the Lending Club. It's worked out well, and he's thinking about putting in more. Wonder if we had an opinion on these peer-to-peer lenders. And there's a number of them out there.
Yeah, there's probably at least a dozen of them now.
And they've had their own internal issues the last few months.
Not only internal, but how they have valued some of the bond packages they've put together, the scrutiny that they're receiving from regulators. How do you feel about peer-to-peer, Scott? And well, let's explain what peer-to-peer is, right? A peer-to-peer loan says, I go on a website and say, hey,
yeah,
I'd
so
like
what,
to borrow.
We're not going to talk about Lending Club particularly. Let's whatever the peer-to-peer.
Yeah, so let's forget about Lending
and
Club.
And I was at a conference with the founder of one of these, founder and CEO of one of these, and he gave his presentation a few years back.
So you go on and you say, I need to borrow $10,000 and I'm willing to pay 7% interest and this is why you should lend it to me. Or I don't want to pay any more than 5% interest and this is why you should lend it to me.
And so, let's as an example, Pat, you go online, you put this up, and then me, Scott, as someone who wants to invest, I look at Pat and I say, Pat looks like a good guy. I'll go ahead and loan Pat that money.
Or a portion of that money. Or you might put up $10,000 and break it into tranches where you lend $1,000 to 10 people. So it's not an all or nothing. It's a peer-to-peer. So
here's the challenge. How do you underwrite, in other words, assess the risk?
Who assesses the risk? And why are they borrowing money through this new platform when money is actually really cheap right now?
Really cheap right now.
Really cheap.
Seeing what your mortgage rate is.
And credit standards, although they're higher than they once were.
Not all that high.
They're not all that high. They're not all that high.
So this a relatively new concept, right, that has yet to go through a recession.
It hasn't been tested. hasn't been tested. And we don't know what fraud is out there. I'm not saying there is fraud in the peer-to-peer. We don't know. You have no idea.
So someone makes up a...
whatever. Whatever. Yeah. So but this is the sort of thing that fraudsters are attracted to, is new concepts and industries.
I wonder how hard it would be to make, have a false identity, to create a false identity.
I don't know. So can you talk about your investments like LendingClub? Listen.
I wouldn't recommend it.
I wouldn't put $100 of my savings into a peer-to-peer lender. Not 100. And the reason is I'm not comfortable enough with the outcomes to feel comfortable with it.
And look, the interest rate is one thing, right? So when you invest in anything, maybe it's your retirement dollars. This gentleman had a Roth IRA. It's retirement dollars, money saved for your kids' education. When you invest in anything, there's two types of returns. The first return is your return of your principal.
That's the one you should be most interested in.
Yes.
Am I going to get my money back?
The second type of return is the return on your principal, that interest.
And my fear here is return of principal.
And if you look at it and think, well, I earned 7% on this one worked out, and that one worked out, and this other one worked out, but the last one did not work out.
And you lost all your money.
That can wipe out all the interest and then some from the ones that did.
So,
and you can go through and run mathematical calculations and determine those things, which is what credit card companies do and banks do. They know there's always a certain percentage of loss. They factor that in, and they know that their returns are going to be slightly lower because not every borrower is going to repay. They know that.
Yeah.
That's how it works. So I would have...
large reservations.
You know,
actually, I wouldn't do it at all.
It's interesting. There are a lot of different types of investments that have been cropping up.
Part of it changes in the regulatory environment that allows for smaller investors to act as what once was considered accredited investors.
Yes.
And an accredited investor, you had to have a income or net worth over a certain number in order to invest.
It's essentially the credit investor rules still exist, right? So hedge funds, for example.
Yeah.
A lot of other private placements, it's ones that are below certain amounts.
Oh, the dollar amounts invested.
And how many investors you're bringing out to. So,
and this is where we've
changed.
Seen them.
And it'll continue to change for whatever reason.
And this is where you've seen the pop-up of these little non-traded real estate investment trusts being sold through radio ads all over the place.
Yeah, I hear one. It's like you can invest basically instead of – you can loan the money. What is that? I don't remember.
Put the money in the bank or buy the bank. That's one of the – is that the one? Put the money in the bank or have the bank as your tenant. Non-traded real estate investment trust.
Your partner.
And they're not good. If you want to invest in real estate, in real estate investment trust, buy a traded one. Buy a traded REIT mutual fund. Don't go buy these non-traded real estate investment trusts that are sold on the radio.
Yeah, and you can only, I mean, you have no idea what their costs are.
Yeah, and liquidity and value.
There's no liquidity.
So
we know those. They're partnerships.
In the changes of the rules that it's allowed certain products like peer-to-peer lending and non-traded REITs to be sold to a whole new group of unsuspecting people.
So. And sometimes people don't know what they're...
And dangerous.
And yeah, I think throwing LendingClub in there with not...
I said peer-to-peer. Did I say LendingClub?
Oh, did you?
I don't know anything about the LendingClub. I just know about peer-to-peer lending.
Okay.
I'm sure the LendingClub is just fine. I just wouldn't do any peer-to-peer lending.
Got it. And if it, just because of the nature of what it is.
Of what it is. Yeah. Where the dollars actually end up.
Yeah. So anyway, Hanson McLean, we do a section in our radio program each week that is real advice. Now, during this program, this time in our show, we talk with an advisor of Hanson McLean. Hanson McLean's got a number of certified financial planners. We talk to an advisor and hear about a client story. Now, I want everyone to remember that this may not be indicative of every client situation, and some clients may have a different type of outcome than what is being portrayed here. But, of course, we talk about the ones that did well, but there probably are some that, according to what the regulators like us to say, that there's some that probably are not. So
your experience may differ.
There we go. So anyway, our joining us today is Justin Wilson. Justin's a certified financial planner, also a certified fund specialist. He's been a member of the Hanson McLean team for, what, I think over 7 years. Meets with clients and future clients here in Sacramento and the Folsom offices. So, Justin, welcome to Hanson McLean.
Thanks, Scott. Pat, how are you guys doing?
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Always good. Always good. So what's a, tell us about someone that you worked with recently and what was unique about it and what happened and why it's interesting.
Sure, sure, absolutely. So I started working with this couple, it wasn't recently, but about a year ago. There was a segment on the radio show that sparked their interest. They called in and we had a little time to talk. They ran into several issues, one of which was a cash flow issue. The husband had a well-paying job, so they refinanced into a 15-year mortgage. Their plan was to have it paid off by the time they went into retirement. And then as things happen, he lost that job, got another job, and that job paid about half of what the other one paid. So they had a huge cash flow issue with this 15-year mortgage.
You know, that's a, that is not uncommon.
Yeah. And remember, you can get a 30-year mortgage and pay it over 15 years.
Yeah.
But if you get a 15-year mortgage, they expect you to pay it off in 15 years.
That's exactly right.
So the 30-year interest rate is typically a little bit higher than the 15-year, but you have the flexibility of making the extra payments or not.
So continue on, Justin.
Sure.
So, and I'm not telling you that, Justin, because you need to know it. You do know it.
He's a certified financial planner.
Absolutely. The other was they were partners in a rental property with the husband's sister in the Bay Area that just wasn't netting enough cash flow. The home was almost paid for. It was in a rent-controlled area, so they weren't allowed to charge enough to basically cover all the expenses of the home.
Was it inherited?
It was inherited. It was inherited from a parent.
Okay.
Yes. And then the other issue was the job that he had received actually was potentially going to be going away in the next couple months. So we had to look at some retirement income scenarios and actually turning their savings into a retirement income stream.
And so they had a property that was probably valued high but low on cash flow because of the rent control.
Correct, correct. And the basis, it had received a step up in basis when they inherited it. However, that was about, I want to say 5 or 6 years ago. So there was plenty of increase in value over that 5 or 6 year period. So they were also concerned about the taxation if they were to sell the property.
All right. So what was the solution?
So there were several solutions discussed. The first was to refinance into the 30-year mortgage to free up cash flow. The second was the sister didn't want to sell the home. She wanted to hang on to it. And so the suggestion was to talk to the sister who was well off and have her buy them out and then look at 1031 exchanging that into another property as they did want to own real estate, but they wanted something that was going to have a better cash flow situation for them. So looking at moving out of the Bay Area.
That makes sense.
And what was the outcome here?
What's that?
And continue on then.
And then the other one was he had 401ks from several other employers, about five of them, that we wanted to look at not only consolidating at some point, but looking at how that would turn into an income stream if he were to lose his job.
And so what was the final outcome in all this?
The final outcome was they did end up refinancing into the 30-year mortgage, saved them $1,700 a month. They were able to pay off some credit cards, set aside cash to send their youngest daughter to college. They increased cash flow on the rental by $1,500 a month.
Did they sell it into a 1031?
They did. They 1031'd it into another property in another state that they want to live in when they do retire.
Wow. Well, well.
And increased their cash flow by $1,500 there.
Correct.
Well, okay, keep talking. Actually, I like this plan. This is pretty good. This makes sense. This, Justin, makes sense to me. This makes sense to me.
And then we consolidated all of their other accounts, all of those 401ks, some IRAs, into four different accounts, five different accounts, I take it back. A trust account, two Roth IRAs, and two IRAs. and looked at how those would provide an income, and then did some Social Security planning. And since we started this about a year ago, he has ended up losing his job. Hmm. We have come up with and implemented the income plan, starting Social Security, and really we've been able to increase his take-home pay from the job that he had had, in addition to reducing his overall expenses.
So it is mid-60s, early 60s?
Early 60s, 63.
And yeah. Let me ask you a question. Why didn't they not just retire to that home that they bought as a rental in another state right now?
Oh, they didn't want to pay the taxes on the gains from the property they sold in the Bay Area. They also have a highly appreciated home in the East Bay that still has a mortgage against it. And so we're looking at potentially them moving to the home out of state, living there for a few years, and then if they like it, they can stay. But if they don't, they can sell
and take advantage of
that tax exemption, and then always come back to California,
Justin,
in the house that they still own here. Or if they end up liking it, they can always sell the house in the East Bay and 1031 that into another property that would cash flow better than what this one would while they were out of state.
Good planning, Justin. That is why you are a part of the Hanson McLean team. You know, it's funny. I just look at the situation. I think, had they not come in and visited with the Hanson McLean advisor and Justin Wilson and gone through this, and he had lost his job, before,
you wouldn't have been able to refinance the mortgage.
Nope, it would have been a mess.
It was a good job.
So good planning on your part. Thank you, Justin.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing that story with
us. And thanks for being a member of the Hanson McLean team.
Yeah, we do appreciate that.
Good.
Oh, and I cut him off.
There we go.
I appreciate that right when I clank.
So if this sounds like something of interest to you, we have workshops coming up, and visit us at moneymatters.com, moneymatters.com.
That's right. Workshops this upcoming week, moneymatters.com, and you'll see a workshop within a driving distance of where you live, assuming you live in Bay Area, California, Sacramento area, California, or Denver. If you're one of our podcast listeners throughout the nation, my apologies. But anyway, it's been great being with you. Also, if you don't have my book yet, you really got to get it. Go to moneymatters.com/book. You're going to have a great discount there. 75% off. moneymatters.com/book. We're out of time. We'll see you next week. This has been Hanson McLean.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.